This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Beyond the Pages. The book selections for this hour are designed for middle grade and high school listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I will continue reading from the book, When You Reach Me, by Rebecca Stead. Things That Turn Upside Down. That afternoon, Sal brought Colin home after school. I saw them up ahead of me, taking turns on Colin's skateboard. One would ride, and the other would bounce Sal's basketball. They were circling each other and laughing and racing around, and I wanted to be part of it so much that my heart almost broke watching. I decided to stop off at Bell's. Bell picked up the economy jug of chewable vitamin C she kept behind the register and shook it at me. I nodded, and she tipped four of them into my hand. "What's up?" she asked. "Not much." "Got some time for the story?" "Sure. Where were we?"
"Aunt Beast."
"Right, Aunt Beast. So Aunt Beast's planet is perfect. It smells great, and the food is wonderful, and everything is soft and comfortable. But Meg can't stay there. She has to go back and save her little brother. They left him behind with IT, remember?" Belle nodded.
"She has to go back by herself?"
"Yes, she's the only one who can do it, because she's closer to her brother than anyone. It has to be her." Belle nodded. "So she goes back there to Kamazots, and her brother is totally under IT's control, and he's saying all these awful things to her. And IT is trying to suck her in, too, to take over her brain. She's trying to resist, but it's hard. And then, at the last second, she figures out that there's only one thing that can defeat IT, love. IT doesn't understand love."
"Ooh," Belle said. "That's deep."
So Meg stands there and thinks about how much she loves her brother. Her real brother, not the IT brother, who is standing there with his mouth hanging open and his eyes twirling. She starts yelling over and over that she loves him, and poof, he becomes himself again. That's how she saves him. It turns out to be really simple. Belle surprised me.
"Well, it's simple to love someone," she said, "but it's hard to know when you need to say it out loud."
For some reason, that made me want to cry.
"Anyway," I said, "then they're suddenly back home. They land in the vegetable garden outside their house in the broccoli. That's the end."
Of course, I couldn't help thinking of what Marcus had said about how if they'd gotten home 5 minutes before they left, they would have seen themselves get back home before they even knew they were going. But it was better not to drag Belle into all that.
"What's the name of this writer again?"
I spelled it out for her. Belle had to ring up a few kids buying their after-school junk food, so I wandered around the store. I was thinking I would swipe a few grapes, but they looked old and soft. I took a bottle of chocolate milk out of the refrigerator, checked the date on it, and brought it up to the register with a $5 bill I had taken from Mom's coat pocket that morning.
"Weirdest thing," Belle said, taking my five. "You see that guy out there?"
She pointed through her front window and across the street to where the laughing man was pacing back and forth on his corner, doing his kicks.
"Yeah? Well, check this out."
She lifted the plastic tray out of the refrigerator drawer, and I looked in. It was full of $2 bills. Wavy, bent-looking $2 bills. "A couple weeks ago,
That guy out there suddenly starts coming in every day to get a butter on white and a banana. And he always pays with these $2 bills. I was staring into the drawer. You want a couple for your change? Belle asked. I nodded, and she handed them to me. Sorry, she said, smoothing them out. They're crumpled. He gives them to me all folded up into triangles, if you can believe it. The first time, I didn't even think it was real money. I started telling the guy to get lost. My brain was doing that thing where it yells at me. It was yelling, "The Laughing Man stole Jimmy's Fred Flintstone Bank." The Laughing Man? The guy is loony, Belle said thoughtfully. But also generally polite. Polite is always worth something. When I walked by him a minute later, the Laughing Man was shaking his fist at the sky and kicking his legs out into the traffic, rushing up Amsterdam Avenue. A few cars honked at him. When he saw me, he pointed and yelled, "Smart kid! Smart kid!" I popped my last two vitamin C's and imagined the wrapped in a blanket feeling I'd had when Mom was with me. Then I calmly walked by the Laughing Man, thinking, yeah, really polite. Colin and Sal were in the lobby, making a total racket with the skateboard and the basketball so that any second Mrs. Bindocker would probably come charging out of her apartment, yelling that they were scaring her cat. Hey, Colin said when he saw me. I thought you lived in this building. Want to skate a little? He picked up his skateboard and held it out to me. I glanced at Sal, who was concentrating on his basketball like the whole concession of bouncing had just been invented and was really very amazing and deserving of attention. He had developed a way of waving at me without making eye contact. It was kind of like a no-look pass. No thanks, I said. I have to go. But Colin is Colin. If he can read a vibe, he never lets on. Can I see your place? He said. We're shooting baskets in the back. Have you been back there? It's cool. Want to come hang out? I told Colin that my mother was sick upstairs and that I was just rushing home from the store. You got our chocolate milk? He asked, pointing at the bottle in my hand. Yeah. I headed for the stairs. She loves it. And I sprinted up to the second floor before he could say anything else. When I unlocked our door, the apartment felt like a warm hug. The refrigerator was humming. The light was streaming through the living room windows, and the voice in my head said, "Safe!" and then got quiet. I went to the kitchen, opened my chocolate milk, and took the last bag of Lay's. Those pregnant jailbirds were out of luck. Then the phone rang. Hello? Have I reached the Sinclair residence? May I speak with Miranda? I rolled my eyes. Hi, Julia, I said. It's me. That first time we only talked for 5 minutes. Julia said her mom had a recipe for a flourless cake we could make for Anne Marie's birthday. Without knowing whether I really wanted to, I agreed to go over and make a practice cake with her after school the next day. It was dark outside when there was a tap at the door. I sat up on the couch. A tap on the door was a strange thing. Everyone rings our bell except for Louisa, who always knocks her regular knock. I was afraid. Your notes had done that to me. Another tap. Hello? I called. Silence. I got up and looked through the peephole. Colin stood there holding his skateboard in front of him like a shield, looking not exactly like himself. I opened the door. What's wrong? He took two steps forward and kind of hovered right in front of me for a second, and then he kissed me. And then he stopped and waited. And then I kissed him back. He smiled and ran down the stairs. There are days when everything changes, and this was one of those days. Things that are sweet. Julia's mother had a whole shelf full of books about cooking. No fat cooking, cooking extra, extra light, skinny cooking. My mom is always on a diet, Julia said, pulling a book from the shelf. I think she bought this one by mistake. Actually, it actually has the word butter in it. She laughed and held out the giant bag of Fritos she had bought on the way home. I shook my head. I'd eaten too many already. Should we start making the cake? I had to call Mom at work 3 times to ask her questions like, how many tablespoons are there in a stick of butter? And is it okay to use a potato peeler to skin an apple? The 3rd time I called, she said, hold on, Mira. Are you planning to use the oven? Is there an adult in the house? When I said I thought Julia's mother was home, though technically I had not actually seen her, Mom said, but is she watching you? Where is she? Where's your mother? I whispered to Julia. She's meditating, Julia said. Here? Yes, in the closet. And she absolutely cannot be disturbed. Did you just say your mom's in the closet? Julia looked down at the French pot holder in her hand. It's a walk-in closet, she said quietly. Mom said we couldn't light the oven until Julia's mother came out to supervise us, so we put our clumped together cake batter in the fridge and went to Julia's room to watch television. Julia's room was like a ruffled version of Anne Marie's. Ruffled curtains, ruffled bedspread, lots of ruffled pillows, and books all over the floor. Some stacked in the piles, some worn looking, some brand new, some splayed upside down, some sliding off the pink bedside table next to the lamp with the orange fabric shade. I tried to think of something to say about all the ruffles. Nice lamp, I said. She put her hands on her hips and looked at the lamp. Really? Because I think it's kind of ugly. My mom picked it. She waved one arm across the room. She picked out all the stuff, and she won't let me put up my outer space posters. I had to hang them in my bathroom. She jerked a thumb toward a door. Her own bathroom. Something very, very familiar caught my eye. It was on the bedside table, under the ugly lamp. It was my book! Or maybe it was my book's twin sister, just as old and beat up looking as mine, but with different creases and one corner rippled off the cover. I went over and picked it up. Yeah, she said. I notice you carry yours around. I leave mine at home. I got a first edition for Christmas. That means it's one of the original. You did? You are so lucky, she said. All I ever get is clothes and jewelry. I stared at her. I thought you liked all that stuff, I said. Yeah, actually I do, she smiled. But I like other stuff too. That was when I noticed her Mysteries of Science poster leaning up against a wall. Hers was called Is There Intelligent Life in Outer Space? Her bubble letters were a lot better than mine. She flopped down on her shaggy pink wall-to-wall carpeting, glanced at her digital clock, and reached out automatically to turn on the TV. And I realized that we probably spent our afternoons the same exact way, except I can at least get my mother on the phone. Julia's apartment is a lot nicer than ours. but I'm pretty sure there's no phone in the closet. I stretched out on the rug and rested my head on my arms. Julia looked me up and down. Hey, you know what color your hair is? She asked. My hair? I touched it and made a face. It's brown. She looked at it thoughtfully. No, when you see it in the light, it's really more of a caramel. Caramel? The last note. I'm up to the part about what happened on the corner. If I ever do write your letter, I'll tell this part very carefully. I was walking home alone after school, thinking about what to get Anne-Marie for her birthday. It was cold, but not too cold. The boys were standing outside the garage making noise, as usual. They were also throwing potato chips at each other. Sal's class must have been dismissed a few minutes before mine. He was walking a little ahead of me. I did not run to catch up. I watched him pass the boys outside the garage. They said some stuff to him like they sometimes do. I saw a couple of potato chips hit him on the back. Sal seemed to lose it. He turned and screamed, "Shut up!" He was wearing his dark blue knit cap pulled down over his forehead again. The boys just laughed. My heart started going very fast, but I wasn't really worried they would hit Sal because it is officially beneath them to hit smaller kids. Torment, yes. Hit, no. One of them reached out and pushed Sal in the chest. Not too hard. Not too hard, but Sal stumbled back a few steps. He yelled, "Jerks!" And the boys all cracked up, but no one else touched him. Sal pointed himself toward home and started walking again. Marcus came walking out through the dented metal door next to the garage. Sal saw Marcus and broke into a run. Marcus yelled, "Hold up!" and started running after Sal. I saw the laughing man across the street on the corner. He was in his nutcracker position facing us. Marcus was catching up to Sal, yelling, "Hold up! Wait!" This is where things got weird. I saw something next to the laughing man, like an old movie that flickered for just a few seconds and then went out. It was between two parked cars, and it looked like a man holding his head in his hands. He was naked, and then he was gone. Sal kept running. Marcus kept running. I started running. "Hey! Hey, kid!" Marcus yelled. Naturally, he had forgotten Sal's name. Sal took one look over his shoulder and started moving faster. He was almost to the corner. Traffic was flying by on Amsterdam Avenue. "Sal!" I screamed. "Stop!" But he didn't stop. "Wait!" Marcus yelled. "I want to..." Then he finally seemed to figure out that Sal was running away from him. He slowed down. "Hey, look out!" Sal was in the street, still running and looking back over his shoulder. I think we both saw the truck at the same time. It was a big truck, moving fast. "Stop!" Marcus shrieked at Sal. He was pointing at the truck with both hands. "Watch out! Watch out!" I have no idea what the truck driver was doing. Checking his delivery list, maybe? Or changing the radio station? But he didn't see Sal in the middle of the street, and he didn't slow down. I started screaming and covered my ears. I always cover my ears when I don't want something to happen, like if I drop a glass and don't want it to break. I wonder why I don't cover my eyes or my mouth, or try to catch the glass. I saw Sal's head start to turn, and I knew the exact moment he registered the truck. It was practically on top of him. Going forward meant getting hit. He was moving too fast to turn back. Stopping on a dime might have saved him, but there was no way he could do it. My brain boomed inside my head. Sal is going to die! Sal is going to die! Sal is going to die. Suddenly, the laughing man was in the street, his right leg flying out in a mighty kick. The laughing man's foot hit Sal's body. Sal flew backward and hit the ground hard. The truck hit the laughing man. Marcus sat down on the ground and started crying like there was no tomorrow, really sobbing his head off. I ran over to where Sal was lying very still with his arm tucked underneath him in a way that was not right. Sal! I screamed. Sal! He looked dead. The truck made a long screeching noise, and then the driver came back running out and shoved me away from Sal. Someone, I found out later, it was Belle, led me past a heap of something awful in the street, saying, "Don't look! Don't look! Don't look!" She walked me over to the curb and sort of propped me up next to the mailbox on our corner, and then she ran back to where the truck driver was hunched over Sal, doing something to his body. There was a shoe lying upside down at my feet. I found myself staring and staring at the shoe. It was a black shoe with a 2-inch platform nailed to the bottom. It was Richard's shoe. Everything started to spin. I closed my eyes and leaned my head back against the cold metal of the mailbox. When I opened my eyes, I was staring at four words scratched into the blue mailbox paint. They were stacked one on top of another. Book, bag, pocket, shoe. Book, bag, pocket, shoe. I read the words over and over, and then my brain showed me some pictures. I saw the school library book with your first note sticking out of it. I saw the tall paper bag full of bread that hid your second note. I saw your third note pulled out of my coat pocket with last winter's dirty tissues. And then my brain pointed my eyes at the shoe lying upside down at my feet. The shoe that had been stolen from our apartment. I reached down, picked it up, and slowly turned it over. Inside was a small square of stiff paper, just like the first three. This is the story I need you to tell. This and everything that has led up to it. Please deliver your letter by hand. You know where to find me. My apologies for the terse instructions. The trip is a difficult one. I can carry nothing, and a man can only hold so much paper in his mouth.
I heard Sal cry out and looked up. The truck driver was on his knees next to Sal saying, "Thank God, thank God, thank God, it's a miracle." On the other side of the street, I saw Marcus still hunched over on the curb and crying hard. I could see him shaking. Behind him stood the boys from the garage, so still and silent that they looked like a picture of themselves. Sal was not dead. The laughing man saved his life. You saved Sal's life. You were the laughing man. You were the heap of something awful. You are dead. Difficult things. That night, Richard stayed with me while Mom kept Louisa company at the hospital. Sal had a broken arm and three broken ribs, and he had to spend the night for observation. Richard ordered a pizza. "Do you feel like talking?" he asked. "Not really," I said. "Maybe later," he nodded. "Just let me know." After dinner, I closed my door and sat on my bed with your notes spread out in front of me. "Think," my brain said. "Think. Think, think.
I got out my ropes, tied some knots, and tried to start at the beginning.
The trip is a difficult one. I will not be myself when I reach you.
The trip is a difficult one, and I must ask my favors while my mind is sound. And then there was the strangest line of all. The trip is a difficult one. I can carry nothing, and a man can only hold so much paper in his mouth. I fingered the notes, so small and brittle.
Had you carried them in your mouth?
The trip is a difficult one.
Difficult enough to scramble a person's mind and leave him raving on a street corner. What kind of a trip did that? What kind of a trip did that to someone? Who would deliberately take a trip like that?
My mind began a little chant.
And why? 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 Why?
To save Sal. That's why you stood on our corner day after day. That's why you were always doing those kicks into the street. You were practicing. It was all to save Sal.
Because somehow you knew.
Time travel is possible, Marcus said, in theory.
I am coming to save your friend's life and my own.
Well, I said out loud to no one, you saved Sal's life, but you failed miserably with goal number two.
Richard knocked on the door, and I jumped.
Sorry, he said. Didn't mean to scare you. I thought you might want to come out and have some grapes.
Richard had brought me grapes. We watched some TV and ate a giant bowl of the most perfect tart green grapes in the world. They were definitely not from Bell's. It was nice just sitting there watching TV together. My brain stopped asking me questions. I saw Richard glance over at me a couple of times, but he didn't ask me any questions either. And that was nice, too. When I fell asleep on the couch, Richard turned the TV off and said I should go to bed. But once everything was quiet, I couldn't sleep. Your words were swimming in my head.
Please deliver your letter by hand. You know where to find me.
Louisa had told me that some of her old people died with nothing and no one. She said they were buried on an island somewhere north of Manhattan. I figured that was where you would be soon. I was still worrying and feeling a little frozen when my bedroom door opened and Mom came over and sat on the edge of my bed.
Sal is going to be fine, she whispered, putting one arm around me. The tests are done. He'll probably be home in the morning.
I didn't say anything. I was afraid that if I spoke, I would tell her too much. I would tell her about the notes, Richard's shoes, the $2 bills, everything. And I thought that if I did tell her, somehow Sal might not be okay anymore. So instead, I just held on to Mom's arm, and she stayed right there until I fell asleep.
Things that heal.
The next night after dinner, Mom and I went to visit Sal and Louisa downstairs. It was strange to be there, in a place I knew so well but hadn't seen in so long, like how it might feel to look at my own face in the mirror for the first time in months. So Sal was sitting up in bed with one arm in a cast. Mom gave him a careful hug, and then she and Louisa went to talk in the kitchen. Louisa had dragged a table over to the left side of Sal's bed
so that he could reach it with his good arm, and there was a stack of sports magazines and stuff on it. "Wow," I said, "are those Tootsie Pops? Your mom went all out." He smiled, actually looking me in the eyes. "Yesterday at the hospital, she brought me McDonald's," he said. "McDonald's?" Louisa thought that McDonald's was a giant conspiracy against the health of all Americans. "Oh my God! I mean, why aren't you dead?" But that was a little too close to what had actually happened. He laughed, but I felt myself go red. With his good hand, Sal shook the bag of Tootsie Pops out onto the table, found a purple one, and held it out to me. "Grape," he said. "Aw, you remember!" But somehow that was also too close to the truth. I felt my head kind of buzz and was pretty sure I had gone red again. "I remember everything," he said cheerfully. He seemed to be in a great mood. He also seemed to have forgotten that we weren't really friends anymore. "You do?" I said, unwrapping my Tootsie Pop. "So do you remember why you don't like me anymore?" I was surprised to hear myself ask, but once I had, I really wanted to know the answer. "I still like you. Of course I still like you. I just needed to, I don't know, take a break for a while." "Huh, break." He gestured to his sling. "Get it?" He giggled. "But why? I wasn't the one who hit you." He shook his head. "Hit me? When? What are you talking about?" "What do you think I'm talking about? The day Marcus hit you. The day you bled all over your Yankees jacket. The day you shut me out." "Wait, who's Marcus?" I suddenly got how totally stupid I'd been, never telling Sal that Marcus was an okay kid. I thought of the day I'd seen Sal drop to the ground and pretend to tie his shoe. He probably worried about seeing Marcus on that block every single day. He probably woke up in the morning thinking about it, and I could have done something to fix it a long time ago. "Marcus is the kid who hit you that day on the street. The kid you were running from yesterday." "Oh," Sal cut me off. He looked at his feet, which were just a bump under the cover. "Yeah, that kid freaks me out. He has it in for me." "He doesn't have it in for you," I said. "He really doesn't. I think he was trying to apologize yesterday." He shrugged. "If you say so." He looked at me. "But that has nothing to do with you and me, really." "But the day Marcus hit you, that was the day that you stopped wanting to do stuff together. You stopped..." He shook his head. "No, it was before that." And very quietly, my brain said, "Remember? Remember the times way back in September when Sal didn't show up to walk home together after school? Remember how he said he didn't have money to go out to lunch when you knew he did? Remember the morning you waited for him in the lobby until you were absolutely, positively going to be late, and then you rang his doorbell and it turned out he'd gone to school without you? And then I remembered something else. I remembered running across Broadway holding my big Mysteries of Science poster and seeing Sal on the other side and yelling for him to wait up. And he had. He'd waited. And when I asked him why he wasn't at our regular spot after school, he just mumbled something and looked at his feet. And then we'd walked toward Amsterdam in total silence until Marcus hit him. Sal had started home without me that day. And it wasn't the first time. But here he was, today, looking right at me, and we still felt like us. So when can we go back to normal? I asked. That's the thing, Mira. It wasn't normal. I didn't have any other friends, not real friends.
Neither did I wanted to say.
And then I realized that was his whole point. We'd only had each other. It had been that way forever. He was still talking. I mean, remember the second week of school when you got sick? I spent that whole week alone, the whole week, alone, at lunch every day, alone after school. And don't take this the wrong way, but sometimes I want to hang out with boys. He yawned.
Ugh, I'm on these pills, he said, for my arm. They make me kind of sleepy.
You could have just told me, I said. You could have just said all the stuff before. I thought we talked about everything.
Not everything. He looked at me in a groggy way. Anyway, I gave you hints. You never got them.
Mom and Louisa walked in. I thought you might be getting tired, Louisa told Sal. These painkillers, she said to Mom. He takes one, talks his heart out for 20 minutes, and then falls asleep, like clockwork. She gave me a tight hug as we were leaving and said, I'm glad you two had a chance to talk. And I wondered if she'd saved the 20 minutes for me on purpose.
Things you protect.
Wheelie was running late. I'm still working on the list, she said, pushing some candy across her desk at me. Have a seat. I'll be done in 2 jigs. That was fine with me. In the 2 days since the accident, I'd thought about your notes 1,000 times and tried at least that many times to push away the memory of your body lying in the street. I wasn't sleeping much, and I was tired. My first bit of honey was just softening in my mouth when 2 police officers walked into the office. Wheelie looked up from her typewriter.
May I help you?
There, Marcus Heilbronner enrolled here. Her face stayed blank.
I believe there might be, but the principal isn't in right now, and
that's okay. We just need a word with Marcus Heilbronner. Seems he likes to chase kids into the street, and we need to have a word with him about that. What room?
She scratched her head. I'm not sure. I'll have to look him up.
That's when I got scared. Wheelie knew every kid in the school, and she knew what classrooms they were in without having to think about it. She was afraid, I realized, for Marcus.
I stared at the backs of the 2 officers and thought about the things Mom had told me about people who go to jail, about how some of them were never the same afterward. I couldn't let that happen to Marcus. He was barely regular to begin with. I thought of him shaking and crying on the curb after the accident and how he'd tried to stop Sal from running in front of the truck and how he'd been too clueless to realize Sal was running away from him in the first place.
I need to use the phone, I said to Wheelie.
This phone? She put one heavy hand down on top of it.
I don't think so. Please, I said.
No, ma'am. From behind her desk, she pulled out a plastic tub full of index cards and started to flip through them while the officers watched.
Let's see, she said. Hillmanner? Right. Any idea what grade he's in?
They looked at each other.
Heilbronner, one of them said.
Don't you have an alphabetical list?
Of course, she said. But that's down here somewhere.
Her voice trailed off as she started to roll her chair toward the file cabinets that stood along the back wall. I left the office casually, as if I just had to go to the bathroom. And then I sprinted around the corner and down the dead-end hallway. In my mind was a picture of the dentist's white wall phone. The dentist was relaxing in his chair, looking very comfortable with a paper cup of coffee and the newspaper.
Hi, Miranda, he said, sitting up. You have the patient list?
Can I use your phone? I called to him. It's an emergency.
He looked surprised, but said, sure, go ahead.
I called my mom at work. I need help, I said. The police are at school, and I think a kid is going to get arrested. A friend.
But all the lawyers are in court, she told me.
I started to cry.
Can you come, Mom, right now?
Me? She said. And then, yes, I'm coming. By the time I hung up the phone, I had the dentist's full attention.
What's up? He said.
Marcus is in trouble, I said. The police are here, and they might arrest him, and he didn't even do anything wrong. If my mom can get here, I think she can help.
Marcus is a good kid, he said firmly. A good kid through and through.
He calmly folded his newspaper and took a pen from his pocket.
So, Miranda, are you my runner this morning?
I raced up the four flights to Marcus's classroom. The dentist scrawled a note in one hand and burst it in, yelling, I need Marcus! And waving the piece of paper in Mr. Anderson's face.
Calm down. What's wrong with you?
Mr. Anderson stared at me, and I tried to stand still. He examined my note.
All right, Marcus, go ahead.
Marcus nodded and started rearranging the pile of books on his desk.
Leave your books, I called to him.
The dentist says he needs you right now. Out in the hall, I said,
you need to hide. The police are here, and I think they want to arrest you.
I started running toward the stairs. Marcus called quietly after me.
It would probably be better if we walked.
He was right. 5 seconds later, we strolled right past the police officers on their way to Mr. Anderson's classroom. They didn't even glance at us. The dentist locked the door behind us. Then he looked at me.
Your mom is a lawyer?
Sort of.
Okay, we'll just sit tight until she gets here.
The police didn't come to the dentist's office right away. It must have taken them a while to find it. Nobody seemed to be helping them much. They knocked, and the dentist called out,
Sorry, I have my hands full here. It'll be a minute.
I was wondering what we would do when a minute was up. The dentist just sat there reading his paper. Marcus looked at his palms.
I wish I'd brought my book, he said, turning to me accusingly.
You're welcome, I said.
I'm trying to save you here.
Does either one of you have a sense of what this is all about? The dentist asked.
Marcus and I exchanged looks.
I tried to stop him, Marcus said. I know, he was afraid of you.
He pressed his hands to his chest.
Of me? You punched him, remember?
I know, Marcus put his head down on his two fists.
Oh, God, he mumbled. And now that man is dead. Oh, that old man. He was afraid of me, too. Remember how he ran away from me? But I never did anything to him. I swear.
His voice cracked, and his shoulders started shaking. It wasn't your fault, I said quickly.
But I didn't know what to say, because it was kind of his fault.
Marcus didn't mean for any of it to happen, but if he hadn't run after Sal and Sal hadn't run into the street, and wouldn't you still be alive?
The dentist was staring at us.
On second thought, it might be better not to talk, he said, nodding at the door.
Time crawled. The police waited, knocked, waited again, talked into their walkie-talkies, knocked again, disappeared, came back, knocked again, and then started calling out things like, "He better be in there when this door opens, Doc."
And the dentist called his own stuff through the door about anesthesia and paste drying time and only having two hands. It didn't make a lot of sense. Marcus stared at the floor, which I just noticed was tiled with tiny white hexagons like the ones in our bathroom at home. My brain sorted the hexagons into the usual shapes and flowers. It was weirdly comforting. Then, very quietly, Marcus said something. "I have an older brother, Anthony." I looked over at him. "I want you to know why I hit your friend that day."
"Sal! His name is Sal! God! Why don't you ever remember anyone's name?"
The dentist shushed us. Marcus made his voice even lower. "The day before I hit Sal, my brother Anthony said something about another kid's girl. I think he meant it as a joke, but this guy got Anthony up against this car, and he was hitting him and hitting him."
I remembered. Sal and I had crossed the street to avoid that fight. Marcus's brother was the kid who had been trying to get off the hood of the car. Who kept getting knocked down?
"I think I saw that," I said. "Was your brother wearing a hat?"
Marcus nodded. "Yeah, he always wears that hat."
"What did you do?"
"Nothing. I was leaning in our doorway watching. Afterward, Anthony said to me, 'Did you even think about standing up? About helping me?' He said I was like no brother at all."
"Those kids are bigger than you," I said.
Marcus shook his head. "It wasn't that. I wasn't afraid. I just didn't see myself as part of what was happening. Sometimes I'm thinking about stuff, and I walk right past my own building. Those guys don't even see me as one of them because I'm not one of them."
"Anthony told me, 'One day, you're gonna have to hit someone and get hit yourself. Then you'll see. Maybe you'll understand life all better.' And I wanted to understand life better, to understand people better. So the next day, I walked over and hit Sal, and then I stood there like an idiot and waited for him to hit me back. But he was bent over and cried, and I didn't know what to do. So I walked away, and Anthony yelled, 'What the hell was that?' And later at home, he said, 'What are you hitting short kids for? Don't you know nothing?' He said I was hopeless."
I was trying to think of what to say when Marcus suddenly looked at me with his eyes all wide.
"Hey, you were the one holding the poster."
My mouth fell open.
"You just figure that out?"
He nodded.
"Interesting poster," he said. "I've always wondered about yawns. I read an article once."
Then there was a fast clicking sound that I knew. Mom's heels on a hard floor. I shushed Marcus and pressed my ear to the closed door, even though the dentist kept waving me back.
"I'm from the law firm of Abel and Stone," I heard her say. "Can I help you, gentlemen?"
"Only if you have the key to this door," one of the police officers growled. She kept going.
"I've spoken with the school secretary. I understand you want to talk to a student by the name of Marcus Heilbronner."
"Yeah."
"Mr. Heilbronner, as you certainly know, is a minor. We can use the principal's office for a few minutes so that you can brief me about whatever allegations have been made. But of course you can't speak with Mr. Heilbronner himself until his parents have been notified. Would you follow me, please?"
One of the police officers swore, but the other one said, "Might as well. We aren't getting anything done standing in this hallway." And they all walked away.
"Thank God!" The dentist let out a long breath.
Marcus stood up, but the dentist said, "Sit down. She hasn't gotten rid of them yet."
Another 15 minutes went by while Marcus looked at the floor. The dentist paced, and I stared out the window. Finally, we heard Mom coming back down the hall.
"They're gone," she called. "Open up. I yanked the door open, and there she was with her hair pulled back, wearing a gray wool skirt and a matching blazer. I flew at her and grabbed her around her tiny middle, almost knocking her down. I felt her hand on my head. Let's try to figure this mess out. Who wants to talk first? Things you line up. It turned out that Belle was the one who had reported Marcus to the police. She'd seen the whole thing from her store window and thought that Marcus had chased Sal into the street on purpose. So Mom was able to get things sorted out. She got a statement from Sal, who had to sign it with his left hand because of his cast, and one from me, and one from Belle, and by the following week, the police had dropped the whole thing, and Mom had dressed like a grown-up for 3 days in a row.
You know, you look darn good in a suit, Richard told her.
I figured she would give him some kind of lecture, but Mom took his hand and said,
Thanks, that means a lot coming from you, Mr. Perfect.
She looked happy, and it seemed so obvious at that moment that they should get married. But she still hadn't even given him a key. And then Mom hung up her suit, and I put all your notes in the box under my bed and didn't look at them anymore. Anne Marie had her birthday party with two cakes, an awful one that Julia and I made for her, and a really good one her dad made. Time passed. Anne Marie and Julia helped me install my playground on Main Street, and Julia's UFO finally got approved by Jay Stringer. I became Alice Evans's regular bathroom partner. We worked out a secret signal so that she wouldn't have to do the Mexican hat dance anymore. Marcus and I waved hello to each other, and we sometimes talked a little, except when he didn't notice I was there, which was about half the time. In early March, we started rehearsing songs for graduation. I kissed Colin a few more times, and I suspected that Jay Stringer was working up the nerve to kiss Anne Marie. I don't think anyone dared to kiss Julia. Sal's cast came off, and he started playing basketball in the alley again. A couple of times I waved at him from the window, and once he yelled up to say hi and ask if I wanted to check out his three-point shot, which he lined up for about 5 minutes and then missed. I clapped anyway, and he took a bow. I tried to forget about the laughing man. I mean, I tried to forget about you, but it didn't work. There was something left over. The letter I was supposed to write. This is the story I need you to tell. Please deliver your letter by hand. You know where to find me. Trying to forget really doesn't work. In fact, it's pretty much the same as remembering. But I try to forget anyway and to ignore the fact that I was remembering you all the time. And then, 3 weeks ago, Mom's postcard came from the $20,000 pyramid. April 27th. Studio TV 15, the last proof. That's when I officially gave up the forgetting and started doing all this thinking. I have the story laid out in my mind now, as straight as it's ever going to be. And now I'm wondering if I should just write the letter, even though you're dead and most likely buried on that island. I wonder if I should write it anyway, if maybe then I'll be able to stop thinking about you once and for all. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today, as much as I'd like to start the next chapter. This Beyond the Pages program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Beyond the Pages. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. Northeastern Australia is home to a rainforest unique in the world. It's known as wet sclerophyll forest. And ecologically speaking, it's incredibly diverse. The eastern whipbird hangs out in the dense understory. It's dark, crested, 10 inches long, and more often heard than seen. Like its neighbor, the spotted catbird, that's nearly a foot long and emerald green with white spots. Easier to lay eyes on is the large pigeon-like Wampu fruit dove, perching high in a tree, gulping down small fruits. Feathered in a stunning combination of green, purple, and yellow, this bird is clearly named for its voice. While pig-like grunting on the forest floor tells us we're in the company of the largest bird on the continent, the southern cassowary. On average, the female weighs 130 pounds and stands around 5 feet tall, looking like a giant, lush, black hairpiece on thick legs. A helmet, called a casque, makes it look as much like a dinosaur as any living bird. Check our website for a photo. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot see.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.
There are more than 1 million English words. Next up, word nerd Steph Donoff with some of them worth talking about.
Only rarely can we pinpoint exactly when and where a new word was created or an old word got a new meaning. This word is bug, as an insect, and it dates back to the early 1600s. But on September 9th, 1947, U.S. Navy Reservist Grace Hopper was working on a Mark II Aiken relay computer at the Navy Engineering Lab at Harvard University. Until it stopped working, that is. She and her teammates spent hours examining the 25 tons of circuits, wires, panels, boards, switches, and lights spread over a 4,000 square foot machine. Eventually, they found a bug in the system, and it was a real bug, a moth. She taped the dead moth to the logbook, noting that it had been found trapped between two specific points at relay number 70 on panel F of the gargantuan computer. Back in 1878, in a letter to a friend, Thomas Edison had written that there were bugs in his phone system, real bugs, insects, but he never bothered saving one. Ms. Hopper's bug, the first actual computer bug, is more than saved. It is on display at the Smithsonian Museum.
That's enough talk about words. Let's go back to listening to them.
are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.